Hopkins. Bryant for the win.
Interviews from your favorite local coaches and athletes.
He's getting to the basket at will, and he's hitting that three-point shot with some consistency now, and he's just in a groove right now where he's pretty well unstoppable.
Hall of Fame and legendary guests.
I was driven by loving to play, liking the challenge of being an NFL quarterback, but after 18 years, I was 1 month short of 39 years old. It's time to go.
Analysis and insight on the latest national sports topics. It's Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM.
More of the best of Drive Time Sports, and we have a lot to cram into the show today, so I'm going to give you the quick rundown. UFC Hall of Famer Michael Bisping. Also, Craig Bowlerjack, longtime Utah Jazz play-by-play announcer. Two fantastic interviews, and as we continue to go over my favorite of 2020, that's what's straight ahead when we return on the best of Drive Time Sports right here on 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM.
Career and technical education programs at Utah State University Eastern offer hands-on and career-focused courses that prepare you for a rewarding career. Choose from three areas of focus: health professions, technical professions, or business and marketing. Students enrolled in the career and technical education programs pay only $82 per credit. For more information and a list of programs, visit usueastern.edu/CTE. USU Eastern, small enough to care, big enough to get you places.
When selling your home, you want to make as much money as you can. But do you know how? Your local realtor does. Their professional experience will help you to understand how to make the most of such a large transaction. Plus, they can help you know what changes need to be made to prepare your home before you list it, to make sure you get as much money as you can out of it. Your home is one of the biggest investments you'll make. Make sure you're getting the most out of it and call a local realtor today. This message brought to you by the Carbon-Emery Board of Realtors.
Hello, Castle Country. Jay here with Castle Country Hobby Ponds Gun and Ammo. Have you ever thought about owning an AR-15? How would you like to custom build your own AR-15? Come into Castle Country Hobby Pond Guns and Ammo, and we'll show you how. We have all the necessary parts and equipment you'll need to build your own custom AR-15. That's Castle Country Hobby Ponds Gun and Ammo at 828 East Main Street in Price, or give us a call at 637-POND. We'll see you soon.
When you come to Castle Valley Orthodontics, patients can find a full range of dental braces and aligners, from traditional braces to newer options such as Invisalign or clear braces. Clear or invisible braces offer treatment that is more convenient and less noticeable than traditional metal brackets. Castle Valley Orthodontics believes that everyone deserves a straight and healthy smile, and that's why they make braces affordable. Call the Castle Valley Orthodontics team today for a no-obligation consultation at 435-637-2222.
You were listening to the best of Drive Time Sports on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM.
Ladies and gentlemen, referee John McCarthy's called a stop to this contest at 3 minutes, 36 seconds of the very first round, declaring the winner by knockout, and new undisputed UFC middleweight champion of the world, Michael the Count.
Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM.
I'm thrilled to bring in our next guest here on the show. He's definitely made his mark on the sport of MMA. He's the former UFC middleweight champion, and he became a UFC Hall of Famer in 2019. He also recently has released a book called Quitters Never Win, My Life in the UFC. He is Michael Bisping, and he's joining us right now over the phone. Michael, truly a pleasure to get you on the show today. Thank you for joining us.
No, I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I'm excited for this one. It's not every day we get a UFC Hall of Famer on the show. And with that being said, we'll dive into it and talk about your book that was released just a few months back. It's called Quitters Never Win, My Life in the UFC. And so, Michael, right out of the gate, my first question, why the book? What put you down that route is to say, okay, I'm going to put my life in the cage in a book.
Yeah, well, to be honest, as I was fighting during my fight career, a few people came to me with a book deal, but the time wasn't right. I was still fighting. The story wasn't finished. And then obviously, you know, I retired. The story was finished. It was complete. And, you know, a lot of people were telling me, Mike, you should write a book. You've got quite an inspirational story. Obviously, I fought through a lot of injuries and I, you know, without getting too preachy, you know, I overcame quite a lot of adversity in my life. So I said, okay, let's give it a shot. And fortunately, it's been very well received. It was a Sunday Times bestseller in the UK and so far very well received out here in America. So I'm very grateful.
You mentioned that your story wasn't finished until you decided to hang it up. My thought from a professional athlete standpoint has always been, legacy talk drives me crazy if we have it here on the show because the story is rarely written. So when you go back and you look at your career, is there a specific time frame, not necessarily a moment, but a time frame that is most special to you that helped that story all come together?
One of the big problems was I got a detached retina in 2013 and I actually ended up losing the vision in my right eye. So I fought through a lot of adversity, a lot of injuries, many operations on my eye, being told I'd never fight again and things like that. And of course, I did fight again and I actually became champion of the world with limited vision. So, you know, I mean, that's what a lot of people draw an inspiration from. The fact that I refused to give up and I kept competing under those handicapped circumstances, shall we say.
Yeah, no question, and that's extremely fascinating in the book. I know it is well detailed, some of the injuries that you had to fight through. When a doctor tells you that you should probably think about hanging it up and you're a fighter and you feel like you're in your prime and you haven't accomplished exactly what you wanted to accomplish yet. In the book, you had mentioned at one particular time you hadn't received a title fight yet and you're dealing with these injuries. Does that thought of hanging it up prematurely ever even cross your mind? Do you even consider it?
No, it's bizarre because right now, I mean, I'd never consider fighting now. It's weird because that person that was alive then is kind of dead now, if you know what I mean. Because right now, I mean, I look back, I think, wow, that person must have been crazy because quitting, yeah, it never crossed my mind once, you know. And it wasn't so much being champion of the world for ego reasons. It was because I was trying to set my family up financially, trying to give them the life that I never had, you know. And the only way I could do that at that time was through fighting. Fortunately now, fighting's, you know, it's opened some doors for me, so I've got other opportunities. But back then, that was all I had. And if that was taken away from me prematurely, then, it wouldn't have been good for our family. You know, that was essentially how I was keeping a roof over our heads.
The book starts and the way it ends, I mean, it's the total culmination of everything. Everything that I've read so far in this book, I absolutely love. And so I definitely recommend to the listeners that they pick this up. But Michael, if we go back to the beginning of time, the beginning of your time, when you first started fighting, did you ever envision that at one point you would be a Hall of Famer within your sport? I mean, was that the initial goal or immediately was it, let's try to make a living because I'm good at fighting?
Yeah. No. First of all, thanks for your kind words. Really appreciate that. And secondly, no. I mean, that wasn't... as I say, I didn't get into fighting because I was searching fame and fortune or anything like that. When I was a kid, I left school at 16 years old, you know, and you come to find out there's not too much opportunities for untrained 16-year-olds. I met my beautiful wife and we had children and, you know, money was very, very tight. You know, we grew up in a poor part of England and, you know, I was struggling to make ends meet, working dead-end jobs, you know, 60, 70 hours a week and still absolutely broke. And I just had enough of it, you know, and I thought, well, you know, I did some soul searching. What can I do with my life? And I kept coming back to fighting. I had a martial arts background. I was talented at martial arts. Unfortunately, I was that type of kid that was always, you know, kind of getting in scraps when I was younger. So I knew I could fight as well. But my initial goal was to earn enough money from fighting so I could quit work, go to college, and get some training to get a real job. Now, of course, everything far excelled that. You know, I exceeded that part of me. You know, I became champion of the world, as you nicely said. You know, I ended up in the UFC Hall of Fame and was able to set myself up. So that was the initial goal. But as I say, you know, things worked out.
Again, our guest right now, former UFC middleweight champion Michael Bisping. We're talking about his career and his book, Quitters Never Win, My Life in the UFC. Michael, let's jump ahead. If we go to chapter 12, and I found this chapter extremely interesting in the book because it does document your loss to Dan Henderson at UFC 100 by knockout. It was the first time, correct, that you had ever been knocked out in the cage.
Yeah, absolutely. And it wasn't just a knockout. For those people that don't know, I mean, it's one of the most infamous knockouts in UFC history. It was the mother of all knockouts. I mean, he knocked me out unconscious, and then whilst I was still unconscious, he dived through the air and then landed a big elbow smash to my face as well. So I was unconscious for a while, and then, you know, it took me a while for my brain to essentially work again.
There's documentation that you didn't remember even stepping into the cage that night. Is that true?
Yeah, I had no idea. I didn't understand what was going on. And then my manager was like, we've got to get you to the hospital. And then I'm like, why? What's going on? He's like, Michael, you've just been knocked out. And I'm like, oh, yeah. No, I'm fine. I'm just going to get in the shower. I get in the shower, and then I poke my head out of the shower around the corner. I'm like, hey, come here. He'd say, what? I'd say, what's going on? He'd be like, Michael, you've been knocked out. We need to take you to the hospital. I'm like, oh, no. I'm fine. And then, of course, a minute later, I'd poke my head out of the shower and say, hey, what's going on? I was like, wow, we got to get you to the hospital. And then I was in the back of the hospital. I was with Frank Mir. He'd just been beaten up by Brock Lesnar. And I'm in the back of an ambulance going to the hospital. And I was like, ah. And my buddy says, what? What's wrong? I said, yeah, you know, before when I was saying what happened, I said, it's all coming back to me. I remember. But it took me a while yet to remember all that. So, you know what I mean? Getting knocked out like that, you know, it has its consequences.
Well, no question. And following that loss, you then go on, I believe it was what, you won 5 out of your next 6 fights, and that set up the showdown with Chael Sonnen. So how did that loss to Dan Henderson kind of mold your career? And I guess maybe even fall in line with the story, quitters never win.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, listen, you know, it's like they always say, if at first you don't succeed, try again. And, you know, as I said before, I had some goals, some things I wanted to achieve for my family. And that was, you know, it's all I knew at this point. I'd put so much time and effort into being a professional fighter. I had to make it work. And to be honest, I still felt like I was good enough to be the champion. I had some losses, some key losses. But I was always close. I was always in those fights. I was always competitive. I knew that if I just kind of got my mind right, then I could be more successful. Because, believe it or not, even though fighting is such a physical sport, the mind controls everything. And the mental side of things, for me, wasn't correct. I always thought that if I went into a fight angry and wound up and emotional, and angry is the best word, that I would win the fight. Now, you may beat, you know, 95% of the people like that, but the true elite, the best in the world, that's not going to work. I mean, if you're in a frantic frame of mind, you know, you're never the best version of yourself, regardless of what you're doing. If you're angry, if you're a radio host, if you're whatever it is you're doing, if you're angry and pissed off, you're not the best version of yourself. And certainly in a high-level fight with world-class fighters, that's not the way to be. You need to be calm, cool, collected. You need to be in the moment, you know. So I knew if I got that side of things right, then, you know, I could compete. And fortunately, I got with a great coach called Jason Perillo, and he worked hard on the mental aspect of things. And, you know, the rest is history, I guess.
Well, let's fast forward. Let's go to February of 2016, London, England. It's you going toe-to-toe with Anderson Silva. His name is obviously synonymous with mixed martial arts, and you come out on top. Talk to me about the importance of not only winning that fight, but the build-up and everything that kind of built as you picked up that victory.
Yeah, well, thank you very much. So Anderson Silva, obviously, he's, you know, one of the greatest of all time to ever do it, one of the best martial artists that ever lived. And when he was a long-time champion, I always wanted to fight him. And, you know, I got into number one contender matchups, and then I'd lose it. Then I'd build myself up again, I'd get a number one contender matchup, and then I'd lose it, you know. But I always felt that I could beat Anderson Silva, and a lot of people thought I was crazy. Anyway, as it happens, he lost the belt, and he actually failed the steroid test, and we ended up fighting. And, you know, the fight was a war. It was a back-and-forth battle. You know, I took a nasty knee in the third round. People thought I was unconscious and things like that. I had fought with a lot of adversity. You know, the last few rounds of the fight, I was just covered in blood, with blood pouring out of my face in every orifice. But it was a good back-and-forth battle. And, I was at that moment in time, that was the proudest moment of my career. A win over Anderson Silva was like a big deal to me. It was in London, packed-out arena. So, yeah, that was definitely, you know, a great memory for me.
That obviously sets the stage for what many at the time would have considered one of the biggest title upsets in UFC history, as you defeat Luke Rockhold. And the story behind this is phenomenal for those who don't know. I mean, you took this fight on such short notice, and you're going up against Luke Rockhold, a guy that had already submitted you once before, and you step in and you take care of business in the opening round to become middleweight champ.
Yeah. So I was actually up in Toronto. I was filming a movie with Vin Diesel. A little name drop for you there. But so I was filming. I hadn't been near a gym in 3 months, but I'd always wanted a title shot. I'd just beaten Anderson Silva, and as I say, I was in Toronto. And then I get a text message from a journalist saying, listen, the title fight with Luke Rockhold and Chris Weidman is off because Chris Weidman is injured. So I text the UFC. I say, hey, listen, you know, if either of those can't fight, you know where I am. And I didn't think I'd get the fight, but I just thought maybe it'll line me up for the next shot or something like that. Hold on one second. Luke, just be quiet, buddy. I'm doing an interview on the phone. Sorry, my son's making a lot of noise.
You're good.
So I texted the UFC, and then they called me back, and they gave me the fight. It was like 10 days' notice against the guy that had already beaten me. So I went in there. I was a 10-1 underdog, but I went in there very confident, you know, and fortunately, as you said, I got a beautiful knockout in the first round and became champion of the world. And the fact that I took it on 10 days' notice, I was filming a movie, I hadn't been in a gym, I mean, that just makes the story so much better. So, it all worked out.
Yeah, and that is in the book, Quitters Never Win. You can read that story, how Michael Bisping took that fight, stepped in the cage, and got the win over Luke Rockhold. So I have to ask you, Michael, is it more gratifying to top a legend like Anderson Silva, or is it more gratifying to silence kind of a smug jerk like Luke Rockhold?
Well, believe it or not, they're both very satisfying. Anderson Silva, at that moment in time, that was the biggest win of my career. Then I followed that up and I beat Luke Rockhold and became the champion. So I guess that trumps it, you know, becoming the world champion after so long. But still, they're both big moments. And then my fight after that, I defended the belt in Manchester. So that was great to bring the belt home, back to the UK, and defend the belt successfully on home soil. You know, 2016 was a great year.
Yeah, and when you defend the belt in Manchester, you top Dan Henderson, which makes it even sweeter, right?
Yeah, no, exactly. Obviously, he had that vicious knockout win over me a few years ago. But the night that I won the belt, Dan Henderson himself had a huge knockout victory himself. So the stars just kind of aligned and that fight came together. Obviously, as I said, it was in Manchester and that's in England. So there's an 8-hour time difference. So the actual fight itself in Manchester was at 6 a.m. in the morning for the U.S. audience. And I didn't think anybody was going to buy tickets. Fortunately, the arena sold out in 6 minutes. And he almost repeated what he did in the first fight, because in rounds one and two, he landed two massive shots that, you know, again, almost knocked me out and opened up all kinds of cuts and bruises on my face. But fortunately, you know, I got back up and got the job done.
Again, Michael Bisping, our guest right now, UFC Hall of Famer. Michael, one of my favorite things about this book, Quitters Never Win, is it does give you a little bit of insight to not only the business, but the behind the scenes of the UFC. And there was one particular sentence in this book that I have to ask you about. You said, after winning a fight, and I'm paraphrasing here, after winning a fight, that is an extremely important time for you in the cage because it gives you an opportunity to build your own narrative for what's next. I'm really curious about that aspect of the business itself.
Yeah, well, I mean that's your platform, that's your moment there. If you're fortunate enough to win a fight and you've got the microphone, I mean, that's your chance, you know. A lot of people, they waste that opportunity. They don't really say anything, but that's your time, that's your moment. If there's a fight that you want, if there's a title fight that you want, if there's a message that you're trying to get out there, you know, to the people, that is your time, you know. So you're gonna make the most of it. As I say, I see so many people, they squander that moment. They don't make the most of it. They just say, I'm just happy, you know, UFC, just give me whoever you want next. It's like, come on, people don't want to hear that. Say something. Anything's better than nothing. Be controversial, be funny, be nice, be heartwarming, call somebody out, talk some trash, whatever, say something. Don't waste that moment. So unfortunately, I always did. It wasn't always the right thing what I said, but certainly gave them something to listen to.
Michael, we can end with this. I believe your story, it's a great underdog story. I mean, it's true. To me, it's a real-life Rocky, right? And if we go back to the movie Rocky Balboa, at the end of his last fight, he says, hey, the beast is gone. That's what he tells his brother-in-law, Paulie. The beast is gone. He can retire. Is that true? Is that really what it feels like when you leave the cage for the final time? You know, hey, that beast is gone and my career is over?
Yeah, kind of. You know, it's funny you say that about Rocky, because that is like the comparison that a lot of people make, which I take as a compliment, so thank you very much. And yeah, you know, I mean, it is weird. A lot of people always ask me, you know, because I am retired now, say, come on, Mike, are you going to come out of retirement? Are we going to get one more fight? And the answer is a flat no. Number one, I've got too many injuries. I couldn't do that. And secondly, you know, the beast is gone. That period of my life is over. It was a great time of my life. I'm very thankful. I've got a lot of great memories. It was very kind to my family. But, you know, I'm not that person anymore. The beast is gone. And now I'm compensating for the UFC, so that scratches that itch. Fortunately, I'm still a part of the sport. I'm still octagon side. I'm able to compensate the fight. So, as I say, I'm still involved. If I had nothing to do with the UFC, then, of course, I'd probably miss it more. But more importantly, as you said, to use that phrase, the beast is gone. I'm a very different person these days.
Michael Bisping, our guest right now. Again, the book is called Quitters Never Win, My Life in the UFC. I highly recommend you pick it up. Michael, before I let you go, please let the listeners know where they can find you social media-wise and also follow your work now that you are no longer in the cage.
Yeah, well, one of the main things I do that fills with time, I actually have a podcast called Believe You Me. See that on YouTube or Spotify, wherever you get your podcast from, you can find that. So that's called Believe You Me. Check it out. Me and my buddy, he's a comedian from New York. We talk about fights. We talk about current events. We often get a little too controversial. We're funny. We're silly, you know, but a lot of people love it. It's actually very successful. Sorry, very popular, pardon me. So, yes, so check that out, Believe You Me. And, I'll probably see you on a UFC event sometime soon when we can all get together in big crowds. In the meantime, I hope everyone is staying safe throughout this crazy time, staying away, social isolation, social distancing, all that good stuff. But my best wishes are with everybody.
Michael, I truly enjoyed the conversation. Thank you so much for the time. You and your family stay safe.
All the best, buddy.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Straight ahead, you'll hear from Utah Jazz play-by-play man Craig Bowlerjack on the best of Drive Time Sports.
This year has been so different. There's been a lot more indoor time, which means more use for your carpets. Muddy feet, spills, even pet hair. Did your carpet make it? Well, with the holidays coming up, now is the perfect time to schedule an appointment with Clean Tech Cleaning and Restoration. They can get your carpets, tile, even your blinds cleaned in time for all your holiday festivities. Call Clean Tech Cleaning and Restoration at 650-1933 and leave the dirty work to them.
The hunts are here again, and this year you're going to be ready with a new truck. Well, at least a new-to-you truck. Desert View Federal Credit Union is here to help. With the great rates at Desert View Federal Credit Union, you can get more truck for your money. Plus, for a limited time, Desert View is giving you up to 1% cash back. So go into a branch in Huntington or Farron today. Get pre-approved and get shopping for that truck before the hunt gets here.
Membership and eligibility apply. Loans on approved credit. Member NCUA.
So, tell me something. Do these modern trucks have a switch to roll up the window, or do you prefer driving with the window down in the middle of winter?
Funny. The motor inside the door is broken. I don't know how to fix it. And why didn't you bring a coat?
I hate wearing a coat inside a vehicle. Why don't you stop by Frank's Glass? They fix electric windows, you know.
No, I did not. When were you going to reveal this important information to me?
I just did.
Frank's Glass repairs and installs door window regulators located at 128 West Main Street. Or visit Frank's Glass on Facebook or Instagram.
You hear that? Yeah, me too. Who wants to go out in this? I do. This winter, get your family and friends together and get to Gateway Lanes. Gateway has open bowling Monday through Saturday, and the snack bar is open. Times for open bowling are Monday through Thursday, noon to 5:30, and noon to close on Friday and Saturday. 94th South Main and Helper. Gateway Lanes can help ease the pain of your winter blues.
You were listening to the best of Drive Time Sports on KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
Live from the Auto Farm Studios, it's Drive Time Sports on KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM, the play-by-play home of the Emory Spartans.
We're back on Drive Time Sports, live from the Auto Farm Studios. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini. Extremely excited to bring in our next guest. Longtime play-by-play announcer for the Utah Jazz, entering year 15 behind the microphone for the TV broadcast. He is Craig Bowlerjack, and he's joining us right now over the phone. Craig, it's a pleasure to get you on the show today. Thank you so much for taking out the time.
Absolutely. Jordan, hope you're well, staying safe, and the rest of your listeners, and let's just hope soon we'll be back doing what we love doing, right?
Absolutely. And, you know, it's so unique. First off, you've been in broadcasting for so long. Could you ever have possibly even imagined that we would have this type of setting? I mean, going over the whole course of the NBA season, it's just been one thing after another. It's been surreal, to say the least.
Oh, Jordan, my goodness. You know, if someone would have said world pandemic, I would say let's hope not. But I never thought it would impact so many around the world, but also impact industries, you know, our daily lives, but also take out professional sports as we know it. This shocked me. This was, you know, a night in Oklahoma City back on, and I'll never forget this, March 11th, when this game, and I knew something was up. We knew that Rudy was being tested, but I didn't really comprehend the impact of it all until they walked off the floor and I got back to the locker room and we were ushered into that side room and told us that Rudy was positive and stay here. And that's where we stayed for 6+ hours until we were able to be tested. So we went through quite an experience together, the team plus the broadcast crew. And it's a night I'll never forget. But I think more or less, not just on a personal basis, but just the impact it's had and continues to have on the world of sports, but most importantly, the health of every individual we know around the globe. So I just hope that something miraculous happens and that the curve bends downward and we can hopefully get back to doing what we love.
Yeah, I'm sure this is the longest you've gone without announcing a game or calling a game in years.
Oh, you know what? It's funny you say that because my wife was just in here, and she was so happy that I was going to be doing a radio show because it keeps me out of her hair. You know, and that really is something. I mean, I've been doing this for a long time, and I have a passion, and I love what I do. I think also it's kind of told me that I'm not ready to retire ever. I love to work, and I like to be around people, and I like the unknown of, as you know, play-by-play. You can prepare, but you never know really how a game is, the outcome of a game will end at the end of the game or when the horn sounds. So, yeah, for me, I think I've re-engaged myself to know that I'm nowhere near ending my career. I love what I do, and I think my wife will absolutely agree. Stay at it as long as you can and stay out of my hair. I'm joking, but I think we found out a lot of things, you know, about our about being quarantined, with stay at home, stay safe. We venture around on occasion, try to be as safe as we can, but it's been a challenge and difficult because, Jordan, you know, I tell you, we're on this roller coaster throughout the course of a year, and, you know, it has its highs and lows, and it speeds up and slows down, but through the course of nearly 100 games, when you do preseason and regular and hopefully a round or so of playoffs, you know, you kind of know when the roller coaster or the train's going to come to a stop, but I didn't expect it just to hit the brakes so suddenly on that night in Oklahoma City. And all of a sudden, as you were preparing for a stretch run into the playoffs, all of a sudden the brakes do hit and you have to get off. And I wasn't ready for it.
No, I don't know that anyone was. I mean, it really came out of the blue. And with that being said, I know it's so minuscule in the grand scheme of everything, but has there been any realistic talk about us getting a conclusion to this season? I know Jazz fans want some sort of ending. I mean, it was one of the most exciting seasons going back to the offseason. It was definitely one of the most exciting offseasons Jazz fans have had in quite some time. Has there been any talk about maybe a conclusion, at least something that you've heard on your end?
Well, the only thing that I've heard is what basically I think Adam Silver echoed a couple of weeks ago on that teleconference call when they were, you know, kicking around ideas. And one was the Las Vegas scenario where you could maybe quarantine players in one hotel and play at Thomas and Mack's in the Cox Pavilion. Now, I don't know if that will come to fruition or not. I think the players want to play. Owners would like to see the teams back on the floor because of the financial impact it's had. And I believe television, you know, and I think the fans are hungry for basketball and to see what the outcome of this season would be. I know they don't want to see an asterisk, you know, put by the 2019-2020 season, but it may end up that way, Jordan, honestly. But, you know, I think that there's smarter people than you or I that are trying to figure this out, but they also have to put the safety first factor. And I think, again, the league has always tried to, you know, make sure they're in contact with, you know, health officials, what the government officials believe is what's best. So, you know, I don't. Vegas, I think, would obviously love to have the opportunity to host the NBA playoffs, but again, it's got to be under the right conditions, and for the players' union to agree to all that. So, I wish I had a solid answer for you, but I think it's fluid. I don't think they've given up. I think that's the one thing I can tell you. I don't believe that there's been a drop dead date yet for the league. You know, as we run into May here in a couple of weeks, there's still time. I don't know if you can complete what would be 18 games for the Jazz in the regular season, but you could start a playoff scenario, I think, later this summer if it comes to that and they believe it's safe for the players and the officials and the support team, the support staff that's around this team, around all the teams. But, you know, if that's the case, the Jazz would play, strangely, Oklahoma City in the first round, right? 4-5, and kind of a strange scenario if that would actually come to pass. But we'll wait and see, and we'll find out together.
Again, our guest right now is Craig Bowlerjack, longtime voice of the Utah Jazz. Craig, let's talk about the season itself. Again, I mentioned the offseason and just how entertaining it was and how exciting it was here in the state of Utah. The Jazz go out, they spend a little bit of money, they bring in Mike Conley, they bring in Bogey. I mean, all in all, it was a great offseason for this team. Was there a specific storyline that you had, maybe even more fun following than some of the others throughout the season? Was there something that you were even looking forward to moving into the postseason with this team?
You know, I think it was probably seeing Mike continue to grow into his role. I think we all were a little bit surprised that it took time. And he had the injury, the hamstring injury, that kept Conley out of the lineup. And the Jazz, you know, won, what, 19 of 21. And there was a lot of talk, you know, is this going to work or not? But I think Mike was really starting to kind of find his way, you know, just before and after the All-Star break. And so I was kind of wanting to see how it was all going to play out. Joe Ingles, I think, also was beginning to understand his role, you know, off the bench, and understand, too, that just because you don't start doesn't mean you don't finish in finish games in crunch time. And that's where Quinn Snyder, when I've talked to him multiple times, Jordan, I know there's a lot played on starters in this league, but really if you focus on who finishes is where the trust factor and, you know, how the Jazz were going to finish. And Joe was almost usually always on the floor. Jordan Clarkson found himself on the floor. That's another story that we can get into as well, the way that he was able to, you know, basically revive a bench after they made the trade for Dante. But, you know, Conley was the centerpiece, and I think Bogdanovich also fit in quicker than I thought. And I also was more surprised of his versatility than just as a three-point shooter. When we saw him, you know, several times at Indiana, you know, he popped threes, but he's more athletic and was able to get to the rim much more than I expected. And I think that was a huge bonus, you know, for the Jazz as well. So you had a couple all-stars on, you know, that were developing, and Gobert and Donovan, and his growth was continuing at a pretty fast pace. There were some highs and lows, but I think in your third year, you continue to see a guy growing. He's going to stub his toe along the way, but I thought we really got a good feel of what Donovan Mitchell is and what he's even going to become. But the storylines are just all there. I mean, every player has a story. And, you know, I think Jordan Clarkson, as I mentioned, was another incredible get. And the way that he fell into the Jazz lineup as a sixth man, Jordan, and was able just to hit the floor running and make such a huge impact so quickly for this team. I think it was unexpected, but much needed, by the way, for a sixth man and also some punch off the bench.
No question. And when the trade dropped, I guess it was a quiet trade deadline for the Jazz, which is out of the norm with Dennis Lindsay, but this is a move that happens, I believe, back in December, if memory serves me right. Jordan Clarkson is such an interesting guy. If you go back to his time with the Lakers as a second-round pick, he was exciting when he was in L.A. He moves over to Cleveland. It just seemed like the right time, and it seems like Dennis Lindsay's done a great job of pushing the right buttons. Look no further than the Jordan Clarkson deal.
Yeah, you know, it was sad to see the Jazz move on with Dante, but I think it was good for both sides. And sometimes change of scenery is good for a player. They'll even say that. You almost get, look, Dante, I think, had incredible skills, but we never got a chance to see him grow into them. He was a young kid at 18 when the Jazz rolled the dice, but then injury after injury after injury knocked him out. And he's even had struggles with the Cavs before the COVID-19 crisis when I saw him in Cleveland a week prior and had a nice chat with him, but he had another bad ankle sprain. So, you know, sometimes you're made to play this game at a high level and sometimes you're not. And you know what? I'd like to see him get a chance to get a full 82 games in through one time in his career to really, you know, hopefully excel at a high level, but just not against the Jazz, right? But it was sad to see him go, but I think it was good for him, and I think it was good change of pace for the Jazz, and obviously the Clarkson deal has worked out in great favor for Utah. And again, I'm just still so impressed with Clarkson's ability to fit in and also just impact the team as a scorer. And he's a constant thorn in a defense side. He kind of dribbles like Nash and never gives the ball away. I mean, once he gets it, you know it's going to stick with him. But he doesn't hesitate to get to the rim. And it's been a nice change of pace, I think, for the Jazz as well to get a player like that to give a different look to defenses.
Craig Bowlerjack, again, our guest right now. Craig, you've been calling Jazz games for, it's been about 15 years now, correct?
Yeah, this is year 15. It's gone by quick. You don't replace Hot Rod. You just try to, you know, as my dad always says, plow your own field. That's an old Missouri term. And that's what I try to do. I mean, look, Hot Rod is iconic with Carl and John. And, you know, I've been through a couple of these situations. Paul James at KSL during my career there before I left and went to CBS. You know, those aren't easy things to do, to take people's places, because you really can't, Jordan. You just do your best, and hopefully people will follow and respect, you know, what you do.
Craig Bowlerjack, again, our guest right now here on Drive Time Sports. Craig, I got so many more questions. I'd love to continue the conversation. However, we do have to break for a quick moment. Do you have time to hang around with us for one more segment?
Absolutely, buddy.
Fantastic. More coming up with Utah Jazz play-by-play announcer Craig Bowlerjack when we return right here on Drive Time Sports.
What could be better than high school football and a hot bucket of Kentucky Fried Chicken? What could be better than an afternoon soccer game and a hot bucket of Kentucky Fried Chicken? What could be better than a baseball game and a hot bucket of Kentucky Fried Chicken? You get the point, right? Everything is better when you add a hot bucket of Kentucky Fried Chicken. Eating that juicy golden fried chicken and watching your team play live is the best combination ever. Get to KFC before your next game.
Hey, Tom, you just roofed your house, didn't you?
Yes, I did. I saved a ton of money doing it myself, too.
Who did you hire to haul all the bundles of shingles to the top of the roof?
I didn't have to hire anyone. I bought my roofing at Magnuson Lumber. They delivered it rooftop for me.
I didn't know anyone did that. It had to cost a lot.
Actually, no. And it saved my back and a whole lot of time. Stop by their store in Castledale and get your roof done so we can go fishing.
When you think home improvements, think Magnuson Lumber in Castledale. They carry what you're looking for to get your home improvement projects done.
Remodeling a house can be fun, stressful, exciting, and sometimes cause serious anxiety. Let Nichols Remodeling and Construction help, a company that values their customers, going the extra mile to make sure they're satisfied and the job is done right the first time. Nichols has full-time painters on staff and a custom cabinetry shop. How many other remodeling companies can say that? From tile to excavation, they do it all. Call Jackson Nichols at 630-8687 to schedule an appointment.
You were listening to the best of Drive Time Sports on KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
You're listening to Drive Time Sports on KOAL AM 750. The play-by-play home of the Emory Spartans.
We're back on Drive Time Sports, KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM. Continuing our conversation with longtime Utah Jazz play-by-play announcer Craig Bowlerjack, I'm going to put you on the spot here. I think this is going to be a difficult question. With everything that's going on right now, with the craving for sports, we've been digging out old play-by-play broadcasts for classic broadcasts. I've been skimming through games over the last 10, 12 years that I've done here at the station. If I was to dig through Craig Bowlerjack's classic Utah Jazz broadcast, can you give me one or two that stand out to you over the past 15 years?
Oh, my gosh, Jordan, I tell you, there's so many. I think, you know, what I relate to is the player instead of maybe a game. And I what I mean by that is calling Mehmet Okur and Money Man and the games that he just looked over at us and blew on his fingers. And those are moments, you know, that I just remember. And Kirilenko going five by fives. Obviously, Darren and Booze. Doing their thing on the pick and roll and just being so, effective and unstoppable. In fact, had they stayed with the Jazz, they had a thing going like John and Carl. I mean, the pick and roll, Booze and Darren were unstoppable. But I also learned that, sadly, you know, guys believe there's greener pastures elsewhere. And I've talked to both of them after they left Utah, how they wish they had not. It's really an amazing thing. People think you go to the big city and big things are going to happen, but in reality, what you had in the past was pretty good. So, you know, I think watching, even just a couple of years ago, watching Donovan score a rookie record of 41 against New Orleans, and I think that was the first step, Jordan, where we knew he was going to be really good. And I didn't know if he would make all-star status, but it was the first time I saw him take a game and make it his own. And I think it was obviously that night gave us a flash of what was to come. And he was able to get to the free throw line. He knocked down threes. He really led the Jazz that night. They were injured, and he just said, hey, give it to me. And I thought, this kid's not shy about being a leader. So there's all sorts of nights, you know, that I remember, and a lot of characters, by the way, that have played in a Jazz uniform. I've covered many of them. And now being in the chair for 15 years, a lot of guys have come and gone, but they always leave a kind of an imprint of a personality, you know. And you know, it's really interesting. AB was a favorite of mine, and it was tough to see him go. He was kind of a quiet guy, but we always had kind of a fun, you know, thing. AB and he liked Houdini, and you know, these names just kind of come out of the air sometimes when you see what a guy does and the nickname stick. Sometimes they don't, but it's just kind of the way you feel at the time. And I'll tell you a quick story. When Larry Miller was alive, the great Larry H. Miller, he came up to me one night. He goes, you know, Bowler, I'm not going to ever tell you what to do or say, but you're killing me. I said, what do you mean? You know, Larry, what do you mean? He goes, well, Memo's contract is up this year, and you keep calling him Money Man when he knocks down the threes, and this is going to be a tough negotiation. We got a laugh out of it. But the way, you know, I loved Memo because he was really one of the real guys that I've ever come across in professional sports. And, you know, you meet a lot of guys, Jordan, as you know, and some, you know, put on, you know, a false face. But Memo was the real deal. And he was great. I sat by him on the bus. And we just had great talks. And I loved the fact when he'd run by the table and blow on those fingers after knocking down a big three. But you run across characters and personalities. Sometimes you kind of connect and sometimes you don't. Some guys don't want to get involved with the media. But there's a lot of good guys on this Jazz team, and I think Jazz fans are lucky, and they know that too. There's a lot of great personalities.
No question. Now, if you had to flip that to the visitor's side of the bench, who was the most compelling player to announce when they would come into Energy Solutions? I mean, or Vivint or Energy Solutions or the Delta Center, I mean, over the course of 15 years, when you look at the players from the opposition, is there one that stands out to you?
Well, there's multiple, and I'll go through them quick. The first one that comes to mind is Yao Ming. I never knew the man was that big until he ran by the table, and I looked, and I thought, my goodness, this man is of monstrous size but agility. And that's what amazed me the most, that his calves were like my thighs. And he was still able to get a shot off and was mobile around the rim. And I was just amazed of just how big Yao Ming was. Obviously, Westbrook comes to mind. And the anger that he plays with on a nightly basis. And it's not just really against the Jazz, even though that situation that came up last year with the fans, it happens with him about every stop he makes on the NBA tour. He plays with passion, but I think really Jordan, he plays with anger, and that anger spills over when he's on the bench and the crowd feels it. But that's what motivates him to play. I would think also a guy named Steph Curry has just awed me throughout his career of his ability to get a shot off. He's knocked down several right in front of me and at the table, and I'm thinking there's no way he has that quick of a release. And in a crowd, he's able to do it time after time. And I think we've all been convinced that he may be one of the greatest, if not the greatest shooter from three ever. You know, people will debate that, but his release and his confidence is really unmatched, you know, in the current day. And we'll see what happens when he really gets back to playing with Clay, either later this year or next season. So those are just a few names that jump out. Of course, Jordan, of course, Kobe. Broke my heart that morning when I heard he passed away. We called his last game at the Staples Center. He knocked 60 down. And I remember just standing there after the game, and I just really took it in because I knew it was so special. It was like a movie. We're in Hollywood, right? We're in Staples Center, and I'm thinking, I better take this in. And I did. I just stood there and watched the confetti fall. And I talked to Kobe. He was very kind that day, came by, took a photo, which is unheard of. And we never do that in our business. We would never do that. But he walked over to Matt and I and says, "Hey, let's get a photo." And so I still have that, very special. And I don't really try to interplay with a lot of, you know, opponent, you know, teams. But that just happened to be one of those moments that had happened. And that's a moment I'll never forget. And Jack Nicholson to my left, looking at Matt and I throughout the game, and his Jack voice going, "Hey, boys, you know, he's going for 30. Then he looks at us, he's going for 40. 50, here's 60, and he just chuckled. I'll never forget Jack just having a grand time, three seats to my left on the front row, and I think I'll never forget that moment. We've seen some great players, some great, some incredible athletic ability, and some personalities too, Jordan, that go with those players, and that's what really sticks out to me during my 15 years.
Again, Craig Bowlerjack, our guest right now. Craig, I have to ask you, we had Marty Brenneman on the show just a few months back. We were talking about his legendary broadcast career. His first game of the big leagues was 1974. He got to see Hank Aaron hit his record-tying 714th home run. I mean, what a way to break into the business, right? Do you remember your first game as far as a professional sporting event on the grand stage? Do you remember that?
Oh, my goodness. Well, I started in Wichita, Kansas. First play-by-play I ever did, besides Kansas State football and some basketball radio when I was in school, was I got a chance to call indoor soccer. And people would be like, really? That was the first? Yeah. There was a major league MISL, major indoor soccer league team called the Wichita Wings that were really popular and a very good team. And I got a chance my last year in Wichita to call a year's worth of soccer, and it was really fascinating, very fast. They used the boards like in a hockey arena. It was really fun. And then when I came to Salt Lake, Jim Nance was here, and he and I worked together for just a mere 3 months before he went off to CBS, and I was given the play-by-play duties of BYU. And I was so excited about that opportunity because, as people remember, 84 was the national championship year, so there was so much hype around BYU and the way they were able to win a national championship. Wouldn't happen today, you know, just the way things are, the P5s have all, you know, stacked up and how it's all working out. But, Jordan, I'll tell you, it was fun. Lavelle was as classy coach as I could ever help, you know, or hope to work around or be around. He was great. And then, of course, the Ty Detmer era took us to another level. And I tell you, I believe those games gave me an opportunity to be seen nationally, and I got a chance to call ESPN football and basketball, and then went to CBS for 13 seasons and then Fox for 4, and here I am with the Jazz. So it's been a interesting ride, and I hope there's more miles to go. You know, I mean, I've been very fortunate, but when opportunity comes, you have to work hard and you have to deliver, and that's what I try to do every night.
Now, you definitely have done a great job with it. We can end with this, because I could talk to 100 play-by-play announcers. I may get 100 different answers to this particular question. The night before a game, how does Craig Bowler Jack prepare?
Well, I prepare like I'm preparing for a test in college. I take it very seriously. I think a lot of people sometimes think you just sit down and put on headphones. Not true.
Nope.
I have a two deep for football, and I have a card. I'm looking at it right now at my desk, and I save every one so I can go back for reference. Every game I've called, I've got every press pass every game I've called, I've got in a huge bucket up here in my office. My wife wants me to throw it out. I said, never. I just keep piling them up. But those sheets are so important because I put nuggets of information that I hope we'll all use throughout the course of a game. But as you know, every game is really just ad-lib. And so what you inhale during your preparation, you exhale it during the course of a night. And sometimes you use it all, and sometimes you use very little, because the game dictates on what actually comes out of your mouth. If it's a back-and-forth night, those are the nights you love, because those games are what fans are so engrossed in as well, when Westbrook and Mitchell are trading bucket after bucket, and all of a sudden you got yourself a tight game all the way from start to finish. Those are the ones you wait and hope for. Other nights, the Jazz bust out and open up a 15-point lead, and you start to talk about, you know, the couple of games prior, some tendencies, and you're looking at the opponent a little bit and look at its standing. Sometimes the Jazz are on the short end of the stick, and they're down 15, and you know that they just don't have it in the tank that night. But you try to keep the energy going, because there are diehard fans that are still going to stay with you, and you know that you want to give them what they came for. Others have turned off to old reruns of MASH or Gilligan's Island, right? And you know you lost them. But there's still that base that you want to make sure you do your job and do it well. And, you know, that card that I have gives me a lot of information. But like I said, it's how you prepare and what you know through the course of years in the league. And it's amazing how the mind works, too, that it can throw you back to a time that you remember that plays into the current situation, the current game that you're calling. So, you know, you work closely with Big T. I work closely with Matt. We've got a great broadcast crew, and we try to, you know, coordinate what we're doing and bring the best broadcast that we can. We try to go a feel of a network broadcast every night that we hit the air, and we're, you know, I'm proud of the guys I work with. I really am.
Well, Craig, I definitely enjoyed the last 20-25 minutes of the conversation. I really, really appreciate you making time for us today. Before I let you go, please let the listeners know where they can follow Craig Bowler Jack. I know right now everybody is craving any little tidbit we can get of sports, and you are active on Twitter.
Yeah, I am. Not like some, obviously, but I'm at Buckle Up Bowler, and if you want to follow, please do. I try to throw in a few tidbits before and after a game, and I like to interact with fans, and I get a kick. I really wasn't into social media, Jordan, much until about 2 or 3 years ago. Then I realized just, you know, I think how important it is to stay connected and, you know, to try to put a voice out there a little bit about what we do and where the games are. People always ask, what time is the game tonight? Where can I see you guys? And so we always try to feed out that information as well. But I really get a kick out of the humor and some of the incredible, you know, notes and tweets that you see out there. The passion, Jordan, is deep for sports. Not only the Jazz, but for Southern Utah and for Northern Utah and for Utah football, BYU. I mean, and the whole region. I've learned a lot from social media, and I think I see the passion of sports fans and how much they actually miss Utah Jazz basketball right now. I can just say to everybody, be safe. And let's hope we get back into this together real soon. And there's nobody more anxious than myself to bring Jazz basketball to them and to share those great moments. And hopefully there's a lot more to come.
No question. No question. Craig Bowler Jack, once again, thank you so much for the time today. It was a pleasure.
Jordan, anytime, my friend. And my best to you. Stay safe. And hopefully our paths will cross soon.
You've been listening to the best of Drive Time Sports. You can also listen on demand anytime, anywhere at CastleCountryRadio.com.
This is Eastern Utah's news and weather station. 1073 FM and 750 AM. KOAL, Price.